all about the pendants, baby.
Hello, Archie. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
All your days are belong to us.
Back off, man. I'm a scientist.
Welcome to Weir Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, technology architect.
And this is User Friendly. We are here with a little bit of a special presentation. We're not doing a full show today. We're actually in our season break until this fall, but we had a very unique opportunity and wanted to bring you some coverage of it. And that is that our Las Vegas reporter, Chaz Wellington, got the chance very last minute to attend the Black Hat Conference.
Woohoo!
So, all right. You know, you hear terms like black hat, white hat, gray hat. What exactly does all that mean besides cowboys, you know, wearing big hats and being good guys and bad guys?
Actually, I think that is probably where this terminology originated, actually. Although maybe gray hat being a little bit different. But the black hat and white hat specifically have to do with hackers. And there's all kinds of different hackers out there. They're not all bad. Now, we hear a lot of stuff, and we've talked over the years a lot about people getting in and stealing credit cards and doing different things with computers and that type of stuff to make them do things they're not supposed to. So, in other words, people that do malware, viruses, steal information, that type of thing. And that would be what we would consider a black hat. But there is another side of this that is ethical hackers. And that's your white hat. That's where that terminology comes from, kind of the good guy, bad guy thing. And there's a lot of work, actually, for ethical hacking. And what it comes down to is, number one, setting up our security software. So figuring out the same thing that the bad guys do, but being able to approach it from a standpoint that they can fix it or they can provide software to prevent it or that type of a thing. That's one area that it's used. Another one is in the areas of data recovery. So someone loses their password access to something, that kind of thing, to be able to recover that. That is a form of hacking. So, you know, we see a lot of different areas. Now, a gray hat is a little bit more of an ambiguous term, and that's somebody that is more of kind of a mercenary hacker, probably would be the best way to put it, that one is usually not, you know, out there just to damage things, but whatever needs to be done gets done. And
so it's kind of like chaotic neutral in D&D?
Yeah, that would probably be a good comparison. So,
are we bringing in wizards or something? I mean,
yes.
Well, programmers.
Technomages.
Programmers are wizards. I mean, we just know that automatically. Yeah, but anyway. But to get back on topic here, Chaz had the opportunity to attend the Black Hat Conference. And we'll talk a little bit more about this in detail in a few minutes. But Black Hat is started out as a hackers conference and now is very well-attended event in Las Vegas that focuses on data security, information security, and that type of thing. So I'm going to welcome, first of all, Chaz to the show to give us a little bit of an introduction. Chaz, welcome.
Hey, Bill. This is Chaz Wellington, user-friendly, and I'm at Black Hat 2018 in the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Black Hat officially kicked off August 4th with cybersecurity education and continued yesterday with Day Zero, a virtual roadmap of Black Hat 2018 and the CISO Summit. Today begins multiple events such as a keynote speakers, arsenal, sponsored workshops, as well as several other important events. Just have to say that I'm right outside the NOC, Network Operations Center, and it is quite impressive, quite impressive. Some of the briefings that we'll be seeing while we're here is Every Rose Has Its Thorn, The Dark Art of Remote Social Engineering, Breaking the IoT, Hacking Industrial Control Gateways. And a very interesting one that I wouldn't have imagined is The Mafia Taking Over Cybercrime. Some of the highlights of Arsenal will be Cybot, Open Source Threat Intelligence Chatbot, Ad Recon, Active Directory Recon, and Optic Spy, Finding Data in Lightwaves. As you can see, or hear for that matter, Black Hat is amazing. You know, Black Hat is everything and more that one would expect. The education is top notch. The people here are great. And to pull off such an event is quite impressive. Just a quick note on some of the sponsors, which include Accenture, Rapid7, IBM, and RSA. The list goes on, which gives credence to the level of expertise I'm surrounded by. I also want to give thanks to Jules Okafor, cybersecurity and security strategist with Fortress Information Security, for giving me such much insight into the current state of cybersecurity, IoT, and the highlights of our industry. As I move throughout the event, I hope to land some great interviews, and we'll see what happens while we're here at Black Hat 2018. Chaz Wellington, Las Vegas, Nevada, Black Hat 2018, and back to you, Bill.
We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to the user-friendly Black Hat Conference special. So, Chaz, thank you for that introduction live from the show floor. And we're going to be back with Chaz here in just a couple of minutes to talk to the gentleman that runs the Network Operations Center. And we'll explain how they set up so quickly to do a conference like this and what's involved in that. But before we go there, so the Black Hat Conference was held this year, August 4th through August 9th. So it's 4 days. It's a convention that, you know, is put together in kind of the idea of the old Comdex or that type of thing. Black Hat's actually been running 21 years now.
Wow.
So this was its 21st year. So it's not a new kid on the block anymore, but definitely newer than some. So information technology and security is a really big deal. And in fact, it's one of the really biggest new fields with the internet that's kind of a specialty thing. So we'll talk a little bit about information technology, a story that I happen to be involved in or know about kind of externally back in the 90s, which was really my first experience with hacking. I started out my career with a major bank that's now owned by Wells Fargo. It wasn't Wells Fargo at the time, setting up software and that type of thing for them. And during that time, there was this story that came up that's it's quite true. It's a company called Omega. And the company did engineering and that type of thing, where they used an older, what would be considered old now, at the time it was state-of-the-art Novell server, that allowed them to be able to do production of models that people had designed. And in the 90s, this was kind of a big deal. You could actually create something in a virtual environment and send it, and they could actually make it. So this is before 3D printers and all that kind of stuff.
That would be a big deal also. That would have been large, large files.
Oh, yeah. They were especially for them at the time. And so one morning, I believe it was July 1st, if memory serves, a employee came in and did the same thing they did every morning, turned on the computer on the workstation. And on the screen comes up fixing whatever file, and it's running through percentages, and the employee looks at it, oh, okay, well, fixing, that seems like a good thing. And it wouldn't have really known, you know, what was going on anyway, and then the computer wouldn't work afterwards. The problem was is that it wasn't just the workstation, it was the server that was affected. And in this situation, the specialist came in and started looking around and trying to figure out what was going on, and got onto the server, and absolutely nothing would run. And this was all very specialized software that had been created for them by an information technology director that turned out had been fired 3 weeks earlier. And at the company, they tried to, you know, at this time there was really no best practices for backups and redundancy and all that kind of stuff. So they tried to get in. They did have a tape backup system, but the tape turned out to be missing.
Oh, great.
So yeah,
that sounds like that would be in quotes, missing, yeah. quote.
And this is an interesting case to talk about because it was actually one of the very first ones where forensic technology was brought in, and it was actually prosecuted, and they had to start figuring out all of this, what would become the age of digital stuff. Certainly not the first hacking thing that had ever happened, but one of the most biggest ones in notoriety, and one with the capability of completely taking out that company. You know, people would cost their jobs, layoffs, all that kind of stuff, which is actually exactly what happened.
Oh.
And as far as the case went, the hard drives were sent to forensic, I believe it was the FBI lab, that ultimately took them and took a look at them. And the hard drive worked just fine, but it was completely blank. And this is one of the things where people started to learn how this stuff really goes. The files that had been on it had not only been deleted, but they had been purged. It's interesting. We just kind of had this conversation recently. So one of the things on a computer, especially of that period, is when you delete a file, it doesn't really delete the file right away. What happens is it just simply says the space is available for use on the hard drive, but the information's still there until it's overwritten by something else. But in this situation, what had happened is they had not only deleted, but they had purged everything, so the ability to undelete it was not an option.
So this person really understood computers and software, I mean, to a very, very high extent.
Very detailed. What it turned out, just to finish the story, what he had done is he had created something called a fuse or a logic bomb. And again, one of the first times this was heard. So this network, as it was set up at the time, had ghost accounts, as they were calling them, where you could log on with just like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and no password, and it had administrative access. So again, we're talking about the 90s. This is before things really started to hit the forefront on how important it was to lock down and secure everything.
So is this where the term backdoor comes in?
Well, what it turned out that he had done, and he was, by the way, arrested later and found guilty of this. So,
well, of course.
It actually went to court and was handled. But what it turned out he had done is he had a 5-line program. Line 1, check the date. If it's earlier than July 1st, which is why I remember the date, nothing happens.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so... And he was fired about 3 weeks earlier, so early June. So it went on working for a while after he was there. Line number 2, if it is, log on as account 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So now what you ended up with a situation was when the employee turned on their computer and logged in, they were logged in along with this ghost account. So that workstation now had administrative access to the server, unknown to the employee.
Oh, wow.
Line 3 was a modified delete program. Instead of saying deleting, it said fixing. That was the output to the screen, and that was the output that the employee saw. And it had the yes-no option overwritten, so it just answered yes all the time that it asked, are you sure? Remember?
Yes.
I remember that.
And then line 4 purged the data off of the system. And I know that afterwards, when the police figured out that he was involved and got a search warrant, they found the backup tapes at his home, and they had been erased as well. And they think what he was going to do is either try to extort or save them. And, oh, I found a backup copy of it. And then when they got the law enforcement involved and they actually started investigating it, he erased everything. Now, crooks are usually pretty stupid, and to leave the tape with the handwriting on the label saying what it is in your drawer just formatted is probably kind of a stupid thing to do.
Not exactly. Well, he had a great plan up until that last point where, you know.
And they always screw up somewhere. But this was really, and the company again was Omega, and it actually did cost a number of people their jobs. What they ended up doing is manufacturing what they had until they either didn't need it anymore or ran out of raw materials. But they never completely recovered from it.
Yeah, because I don't really even remember them.
I don't either.
So,
what did they make?
Custom manufactured stuff. So in other words, I need... something for my company made. So it's kind of like what you'd almost do with a 3D printer now. And they had specialized software where you could send them the files, and they would actually be able to take that, run it through the software that they had.
So they probably used like an AutoCAD.
Yeah, what we would call like a CNC router, that kind of equipment.
Custom shaped materials.
Yeah, earlier version of it. But yeah, it was that exact idea. And it was actually a very cool thing that they had set up, because for the first time, you could manufacture stuff without having to make prototypes and all the rest of it. So from that standpoint, it was great, but it was one server with, you know, and in their defense, they did have a backup tape, but the tape was gone and there was no redundancy, which wouldn't have done a lot of good in that area too, because to get a little bit more in technical detail, if you're looking at what they had at the time with RAID or automatic backups of the hard drives and things, that's good for equipment failure, but it is an auto-replicating scenario. So if you do go in and delete the files, it's going to delete them across the backups too. And that's just part of the way that works.
Wow. I remember using backup tapes and things like that for a company that I worked for. And, you know, those tapes were really a pain in the neck to work with. And sometimes I wondered, did they really do what they were supposed to?
I know when I worked for the bank, we had tapes. And they had just come out with this format called DLT. And digital linear tape, I believe, is what it means, but I could be wrong on that. It's been a while. Well, it's been 20 years.
Are you talking about the little cartridges?
No, these were actually pretty big ones.
Oh, okay.
It was the little cartridges. Yeah, we had a lot of that too. But the bank had, at the time, I think 2 gigabytes of data on their one server.
Oh, wow.
And that would not have fit. I mean, this was a huge amount of data in those days. So that would not have fit on one of the tapes that
you're
talking about.
One of the little ones. Yeah, because I did some work for volunteer work for the USGS doing digitizing, and they had those big reels.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it was a Sun system.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sun Solaris. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know when I started working for the bank, they had just switched off a mainframe server, an IBM mainframe, that had that same type of thing with the reel-to-reel tape backups. And, you know. So in answer to your question, do tapes do what they're supposed to? Most of the time. It wasn't a terribly dependable technology.
Yeah.
And I know in working with it, we do all these tape rotations and stuff. So you'd have one a month that was complete, and then what they call differentials that went over from week to week or day to day, depending on how you were set up. And there were a few times we needed to restore. And I would say about 80% of the time we were able to. About 20% of the time it was, you know, time to take a vacation or something because, oh, man. And when that kind of a thing fails, they say that IT is one of the least stressful jobs in the world. At least it's rated that way, I believe, by Forbes.
Really?
I'm not sure I agree with that.
I don't think they've ever had like problems with a computer that needed to work.
I don't think Forbes knows what it's doing. I mean, I guess it's a thing, but I don't know. I don't see it as being least stressful.
Yeah. I mean, Forbes is usually pretty spot on, but I do not agree with him on that. I know there have been times that I certainly would have been wanted to be just about anywhere else. So, but in any event, so that is the story of really kind of where the field of forensic information technology and the security areas and all of that originated. Mm-hmm. This would at least have been the first very publicly known story. A lot of stuff certainly happened before
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, so now in this day and age, we have the ability to put together a network operations center in 3 hours.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
And that's very different from those days, too. I mean, these designs and layouts and stuff would have been days, sometimes weeks on end. So I want to welcome Chaz back to the show now because he got an interview with the person that does that for the Black Hat Conference. Chaz, welcome back.
Hey, Bill. This is Chaz Wellington, Black Hat 2018 in the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Here at the Knox Center for Black Hat 2018, and I have Stephen Fink here who's going to give us a rundown of his role and all the exciting things within the Knox Center.
So what we do here at the Network Operations Center is we build a full enterprise-grade network in about 40 hours over the space of 2 days, and we stand all that up from the raw fiber to the firewalls, the core switchgear, out to the closet switchgear, and all the way to the access points. And we provide all of the conference bandwidth and Wi-Fi for all of the attendees, the trainings, briefings, everything.
And when you're installing this equipment, is it a process that is mapped out beforehand, or do you go fly by wire?
Yeah, we definitely map it out beforehand. So we have an annual meeting where we get together and architect the network, and I let all of the different partners know the part they're going to play and how they're going to do it. Also, we plan the dates on which everyone will arrive and who goes and stands up on what dates.
All right, well, I appreciate your time, and you have a great day during Black Hat 2018.
You're most welcome.
Chaz, thank you. Guy, it's amazing they can do that so rapidly now. What a change in things.
Maybe it's the computers.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. We've got a lot more standardization than we used to, and things do seem to work better now.
Well, yeah, and the technology's a lot easier. I mean, look at the cabling that goes in to the way systems were years ago, and now look at it way it is today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and the difference between the two, and again, another little quick memory here, but I wrote my first piece of software when I was 12 that was commercial. And the first one was for a paralegal office that my parents ran. And the second one was a game for an online bulletin board, which at the time, pre-internet or pre-World Wide Web, was something that you could actually dial into over a modem and do. And I set up a network at my parents' office between two computers, and we were running coax cable. So like what you use for your television?
Yeah. They don't do that now.
No.
Yeah.
They don't even do it much for the television anymore with over-the-top internet TV and all that. But
no, you got your solid gold monster cable.
Yeah, but pre-Cat 5, well, solid gold monster cable, yeah, I think that's the gold comes out of your pocket for that stuff.
But you don't even need a cable to back something up. All you have to do is get one of those cute little thumb drives, and they're... take massive amounts of storage in those little things.
And little side note, you heard it here on User Friendly First, the flash drive doesn't even have to be cute.
That's right.
It'll still work.
Oh, man.
I know. The aesthetics of it actually do nothing for how fast it saves or the capacity.
I didn't know you had to have them cute. Where did this come from?
You said cute.
You just said cute little flash drive.
Oh. Okay. All right. You know how... All right. The minute you said cute... I was thinking of like Jeremy's one that's like Superman, Batman, Darth Vader. You've got an Albert Einstein.
I've got an Albert Einstein, yeah.
But I'm talking about how they're so small and they have so much data.
Yeah.
And before you had to have this thing, you know, with all these plugs and you had to fit it into the right way and it had a big hole in the back of your computer and you had to shove it in there just right. And if you did it wrong, you could bust a pin and...
Here in the 70s, they even had a kind of port that you had to have a mechanized robot spin and turn and plug and...
Ba-ba-da,
maybe that was Star Wars.
Okay.
All right. So in any event, no, but you're absolutely right. And it's kind of weird to think about it because in the day, there were zip disks, which
I love those.
I still have zip disks.
Yeah.
I still have stuff on them.
A small flash drive that you can get for $10 now
has a lot.
Has what, 20 times the capacity or even more?
One of the first flash drives that I actually had was 256 megabytes. It's four times the size of my current flash drive that is 32 gigs. So, I mean, it's like, you know, the stuff hasn't really gotten smaller. They just don't use as much plastic to make the cases.
Right.
But, I mean, just think of it. A CEO, you know, if he's worried that data isn't being backed up by his IT crew, IT crowd.
Yeah, maybe it is.
All he has to do is stick that little, you know, USB port thing in there, just stick that in, back it up, and... He doesn't need a crew of geniuses.
Well, and that's one thing. The other thing now is cloud backup.
Yeah, you can just throw it into the cloud.
I mean, I myself use Amazon and those type of services, and I have an on-site backup and an off-site backup, and it's much easier to deal with, and it's just a matter of running it, and you're good to go.
And wouldn't you say that your average employee is able to handle a computer much better than they did years ago?
Yeah, and I think
the comfort level.
I think a big part of that is there's a lot more of a standard. In the 90s and certainly in the 80s, it was much more of a
hodgepodge
of stuff put together. There was Commodore and Apple and DOS
Amiga
and all of these things. And then some that you haven't
IBM.
Heard about, like the Atari or the Simex 10 Clair 1000. That was a little tiny thing I had for a while.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't compatible with anything, but it was really cool.
A lot of things weren't compatible.
Oh, it had this horrible membrane keyboard. Anyway, that's another story.
My Atari didn't even have a hard drive.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, in order to get one, I would have to spend $500 for 1 megabyte.
Yeah. And that was the case at that time.
Yeah, that was huge.
And that was a big deal.
And, but the other side of it, too, I ran my first bulletin board. This would have been late 80s on an Atari 130XE, an 8-bit Atari computer. And that had gotten at a garage sale, and the whole thing ran off floppy disks.
Yeah, that's
and ran well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it wasn't a mainframe or anything, but it worked, and it worked fine.
Now, did you have to stick in, like, little disks first, like a boot disk or a startup one, yeah. and then you use
yours was a later version. Yours actually used 3.5-inch floppies. Mine was the old 5.25.
Yeah.
And yeah, you had to boot it up, so you put in the drive. And keep in mind, that was still an accomplishment because before that, you actually had 8 switches for the 8-bit words. And to boot the computer, you put in the switches to position 1, hit the run key, position 2, and it was 16 of these characters to tell the computer how to load from the tape. And if you put one in wrong, you had to start over.
At least we're not working with punch cards still.
Yeah.
Punch cards were another thing. I mean, you know, the not numbering your punch cards and dropping them was a real thing. So,
yeah, that would be a bad Monday.
So, anyway, so there you are. We'll be back after the break. This is User Friendly. Welcome back to User Friendly. One User Friendly on Facebook, one User Friendly on Twitter, userfriendlyshow.com. We are going to be back for another full season this fall, starting, I think, in late September, and I'll have to double check that date. But this has been an interesting little mini show, I guess might be the best way to put it. And I want to thank Chaz for being able to, number one, attend the Black Hat Conference. It was really kind of last minute and unexpected, and congratulations to you for being able to get into something like that and getting the information you did. And I look forward to maybe being able to do this again next year and maybe getting a little bit more of the show. But this was really something kind of cool and kind of interesting. Send us your stuff as we're getting ready for the next season. You help us put our show together. And we're going to have a few little changes coming up next season and a lot of the stuff everybody likes. So we'll talk about that a little bit more, and I will leave it at that. This is User Friendly, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly is copyright 2018 User Friendly Media Group, Inc. All rights reserved. Music used under license. Opinions expressed on this show are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station.